All right, this is Pure Decking, show number 577 for Thursday, September the 12th, 1958. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and remember, what doesn't kill you gives you a lot of unhealthy coping mechanisms and a dark sense of humor. Tonight, we have a madman. What is that?
Hola. Man? Booze is one of those wonderful coping mechanisms that can kill your liver. Remember, you need to take breaks.
The liver is evil.
The liver will regenerate.
But it is evil and must be punished. And we have an Are You. What is up, Are You?
Hello. I am drinking the water. Guy Rain.
You're your coffee-less coffee?
Yeah, my coffee-less coffee. What a future awaits us. Next thing they'll be able to show me where the nipples are on almonds.
Oh, I've got a link saved somewhere. I've got to find it. It was people advocating for the extinction of humanity. And it's like, oh, fuck, that's real. Let me see if I can find that.
Yeah, those people are real.
Oh, I should send you that.
And who would have thought Alex Jones was right? This guy. Well, at least they're not eating your pets.
Ha-ha.
Oh. Wow.
I have to somehow get that from here to there because I have too many fucking... I have intentionally segmented so many of my devices that just moving a link from one enclave to another is kind of a pain in the ass.
USB stick.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not there yet, but you can see it from here. So, but anyways, yeah, where's that link? Okay, I've got the link. Now, how do I get it from there to here? Okay, I know how to do this. I know how to do this. Oh, I need to,
And we're off air and everything's falling over.
Son of a bitch! Wait, are we really off air?
No, I'm just...
Okay, fuck, I got scared for a second.
Like, but I haven't clicked anything yet.
It's all on my phone. What the fuck?
This is why we don't use phones.
Okay, got it. Here's a cool couple of people promoting extinction. Yeah, here we go. We'll throw that link in the IRC2 for anybody in the IRC to enjoy. There's that. It's literally a picture of people at, what was it for? VHEMT, VEMT, Voluntary Human Extinction Movement. It's like, at least
we
start
should
with
start you. By executing them.
I was going to say, start with yourselves. So, anyways, I guess we can get into the actual links I picked out for tonight, not just the silly bullshit I saw earlier in the day trying to look up something for a book. This one's from Ars Technica. I figured this would be a fun discussion topic. The music industry's 1990s hard drives, like all hard drives, are dying. One of the things Enterprise Storage and Destruction Company Iron Mountain does is handle the archiving of the media industry's vaults. What it has been seeing lately should be a wake-up call. Roughly one-fifth of the hard drives dating to the 1990s it was sent are entirely unreadable. Now, 30-year-old hard drives, that was actually one of the old arguments for hard drives back when SSDs first started being a thing, was that, you know, data written to hard drives would theoretically last longer. Like, because writing to hard drives wasn't destructive, they were considered better for archiving data back in the day. But at this point, let me read the article, then we'll get into this, talking about it. Music industry publication Mix spoke with the people in charge of backing up the entertainment industry. The resulting tale is part explainer on how music is so complicated to archive now, and part warning about how everybody's data is stored on spinning discs. Quote, in our line of work, if we discover inherent problem with the format, it makes sense to let everybody know, unquote. Robert Cozzella, Global Director for Studio Growth and Strategic Initiatives at Iron Mountain, told Mix, quote, "It may sound like a sales pitch, but it's not. It's a call for action," unquote. Hard drives gained popularity over spooled magnetic tapes as digital audio workstations, mixing and editing software, and the perceived downsides of tape, including deterioration from substrate separation and fire. But hard drives... editors, fix your fucking sentences. God. I skimmed this earlier, and I didn't realize how poorly written some of these sentences were. But hard drives present their own archival problems. Standard hard drives were not designed for long-term archival use. You almost never decouple the magnetic disks from the reading hardware inside, so if either fails, the whole drive dies. There's also general computer storage issues, including the separation of samples and finished tracks, or proprietary file formats requiring archival versions of software. Still, Iron Mountain tells Mix that, quote, "If the disk platters spin and aren't damaged, it can access the content," unquote. But if it spins is becoming a big question mark. Musicians and studios now digging into the archives to remaster tracks often find that drives, even when stored at industry standard temperature and humidity, have failed in some way, with no partial recovery option available. Quote, "It's so sad to see that a project is coming to a studio, a hard drive in a brand new case with a wrapper, and the tags from wherever they bought it from still there," Cozzella says. "Next to it is a case with the safety drive in it. Everything's in order. And both of them are bricks," unquote. Mix's passing along of Iron Mountain warning hit Hacker News earlier this week, which spurred other tales of faith in wrong formats. The gist of it, you cannot trust any medium, so copy important things over and over into fresh storage. Quote, "Optical media rots, magnetic media rots and loses magnetic charge. Bearings seize, flash storage loses charge, etc." Writes user Abracadaniel. Quote, "Entropy wins, sometimes much faster than you'd expect," unquote. There's the discussion of how SSDs are not archival at all, how floppy disk quality varied greatly between the 80s, 90s, and 2000s, and how linear open tape, a format specifically designed for long-term tape storage, loses compatibility over successive generations, how the binder sleeves we put our CDRs and DVDRs in have allowed them to bend too much and stop being readable. That one on the CDRs is kind of a concern. I might have a crate full of my old burned discs from before I had built a file server. This is mostly going to be high school and early college stuff, but it's been a low priority on my to-do for a long time to go through those discs and, you know, archive up to my server anything that I, you know, might one day care about, and I've never done it. And they've been in garages and houses and back in garages. And I didn't ever thought about them being put in the binder sleeves. That might, well, I haven't needed them in this long. Hopefully there's nothing on them I need to care about. Knowing that hard drives will eventually fail is nothing new. Ars wrote the five stages of hard drive death, including denial, back in 2005. Last year, backup company Backblaze shared failure data on specific drives, showing that drives that fail tend to fail within 3 years, that no drive was totally exempt, and that as time goes on, time does generally wear down all drives. Google's server drive data showed that in 2007, hard drive failure was mostly unpredictable, and that temperatures were not a deciding factor. So Iron Mountain's admonition to music companies is yet another warning about something we've already heard, but it's always good to get some new data about just how fragile a good archive really is. And that's the thing, because, like, I love maybe some vintage hardware. Like, I've got stacks of, you know, we were joking about zip disks before we got on, but I've got a box of the things. I've got Amigas. I've got old Commodore machines, 64s and 128s. You know, a whole bunch of old floppy disks. Most of which will not read. You can reformat them, and they'll start working again, but whatever data was on them is long gone. So, yeah. It's actually kind of amusing, because we've talked about it before, about how for a lot of these old systems, especially early computer systems, most of what's archived for these guys is the pirated stuff. Because it had all the copy protection removed and was easy enough for people to archive up and throw on the internet, especially in the early days. Or even to BBSs and things like that. So at that point, they've been carried forward by, you know, somebody, if archive.org, if nothing else, you know, carrying the things forward and, you know, keeping them alive on web servers. But, you know, bit rot is a thing. So, I mean, other than the crate of old CDs that might be just, you know, garbage sitting in my garage that I need to look at. I don't know. What do you guys think? I mean, are you, I know you like use some vintage stuff.
Yeah, I do, but I lost over a terabyte worth of data just after the Second Life days.
Oh, yeah?
And that was fucking bad, dude. That was like losing a pet. I was devastated. And from that day on, I vowed not to get attached to my data. I just can't get attached to it anymore. Everything is going to die. I know that. I can't prevent it. And worrying about it and stressing over it is not going to make my life any fucking better. It's just dealing with it when it happens and fucking move on.
Well, it's like this new NAS I've been working on for the past several months, and it's mostly just I haven't had time. There's nothing wrong with my old NAS, except I've been running some of those disks for 10 years. It's just time to...
Yeah, there's always time to swap stuff out, but you just, it's a fact of life. You are going to lose some of your archival stuff. And let's face it, that bin of discs you have out in the garage or in the cupboard, Morps, but if they do, fucking fantastic. If they don't, you weren't attached to them anyway. You weren't coveting them the way that, you know, you should have if you really wanted to keep them.
Oh, the thing is, and I don't think anything... Oh, go ahead, Madman. Sorry.
And it's not just archival. If CDs are just slowly rotting, think of all the CD collections people have just bought over the years. Copies of Pink Floyd, they're just going to stop working.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and you know, too, you talk about that crate of CDs I have. Back in those days, I wasn't buying top quality best media that you could get, right?
No, nobody was buying in a stack of 100 that was like $15.
Or because it was an easy thing for my family to get me for, like, you know, birthday and Christmas stuff. Yeah. You know, routinely I wouldn't even be the one who picked them out. It'd be, you know, my sister was getting me a Christmas gift, so it was, you know, a $20 stack of 100 CDRs, right? And yeah. You know, is that archival quality CDs, properly stored? No, it's just whatever they had. And not only, I've run into before CDs, it was more DVDs than CDs. The early ones where the firmwares were still being worked out, where they would only read in the disk that burned, or in the drive that burned them. And I know I don't have those drives anymore. You know, it's going to be some USB CD reader or DVD drive to try to go through these things and see if they even still work. So, yeah, I might just be carrying a couple crates of literal garbage if they don't actually read, you know?
I managed to save a very valuable CD to me from just a local band that put one album out, mm-hmm. and it was just local. The CD quality was not great. Luckily, I caught it just before the rust really started kicking in, managed to digitize it, and now I have like 5 digital copies. And have the original copy of the CD, but it won't play. But you know, I got lucky. That one I actually cared about. That's why I kept checking to make sure the fucking disc worked.
Yeah. No, I get you.
Yeah, you are gonna lose 90% of your archive in your lifetime. Pawn it and then just move on.
Well, with any luck, most of it's just gonna be like old pirated movies and TV shows and stuff like that.
Well, that's the shit I want for a rainy day, you know what I mean? When the internet does go out.
Well, that's the other thing is do I really want those old copies? I could probably find much better versions of them today if I just go pirate them again.
And that's why cartridge consoles are king.
It depends
on what TV shows you're talking about. There's a couple that can't find didn't anymore. Make it to DVD.
Yeah. And they're not up on the internet.
Oh, yeah, because I was looking for stuff, you know, a while back, and yeah, you would find where nobody kept the originals. They don't have the old tapes to go back to because they recorded over them or something.
And that's where the Internet Archive, man, I find myself there more and more these days just watching old home movies. that people have recorded, because you're getting to see the real old world as it was.
Yeah, okay.
And it was fucking beautiful too.
Cykros is in IRC talking about how he had a collection of 8 tracks that all snapped when he played them. They'd play through the end just fine once.
Yeah, tensions, over-tensioned.
Well, at least with an 8-track, you could open it up, and assuming it isn't completely unspooled, you could splice the tape back together and then, you know, try to record it or something.
Yeah, there's ways of fixing magnetic tape. Where'd you get an 8-track player? That's what I want to know.
Probably
the top of my closet.
God damn it, man. I want an 8-track player.
I don't have any 8-tracks for it.
No, I don't have any 8-tracks either, and I have no line on where I could get 8-tracks, but I'm pretty sure if I put the effort in on a couple of weekends scavenging out them way out there in the bushland areas of where they have the smaller towns, I'm pretty sure I'm going to find some shit. I know of a record vault that's just sitting there untouched. I know of a self-playing piano with, or at least 100 fucking reels.
Oh, a player sitting. Piano? Oh,
yeah, but it's a full-size one, like you see in a movie or something like that, and it has all the original wax discs with it.
Oh, man, the old, wow, I hope somebody has played them through and, you know, put some nice high-quality recordings of them and shit like
that. They're all just sitting, dude, they're sitting in a back room of an older lady's house, just gathering dust, man.
Well, hopefully that's fucking all they're gathering, because you can blow the dust off, but if they're rotting.
Great. No, I know it's all not temperature control, but it's not going through extreme temperatures or anything like that. Yeah, they're just sitting there, man. Crates and crates of records. I wouldn't even know what's there. I'm betting a lot of it, there'll be a lot of church music that were like one-off recordings on records from local parishes and stuff like that.
Oh, but that kind of stuff would be gold to an archivist.
Uh-huh, right? But, I mean, I feel sorry for the poor fucker who has to go through my shit. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah.
Like, if you ain't a hardcore collector, you're just thinking it's garbage. But if you know what you're looking at, you could probably cash in pretty well.
Yep. So, anyways, I just, you know, it's a good
but
thing.
But yeah, you are going to lose your data.
Yeah.
You're going to lose it eventually.
Well, you know,
just keep that in mind.
It's like the old backup strategy. If it's data you care about, it needs to be in 3 places. The whole, you know, 2 mm-hmm. is 1, 1 is none kind of thing. And not just, you know, not just 3 places, like 3 different medias. You know, that used to be the backup advice, is to make sure you actually, your backups were geographically diverse and on different media. And preferably in formats that were somewhat open.
I'm lucky I've got a digital archive that's backed up. That's well maintained by the person maintaining it.
Yeah.
Trustworthy as well, so.
Is he? Really? I mean, I know who you're talking about. I'm just like, well, he's got kids.
Hasn't let me down yet, man.
He's got kids. You know what kids do around computers.
I doubt anyone's allowed in that bat cave anywhere near the archives.
Hey, what's this? Oh no, I spilled my milk. I mean, you know.
Yeah, no, I doubt that, man. But, I'm lucky. Good. Next time I'm over there, I'll take an empty drive over and bring another terabyte back.
So,
like, oh, I had an optical drive, and now it stores peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
I'm pretty sure that is as safe as Fort Knox for my data.
Well, how many of us had a young sibling when you had your first console who thought you had to put money into it, like the arcades in the mall?
like a good older big brother that I was, they went near my console. I punched them in the fucking head. That's my console. I paid for it in my money. You don't get to play it.
So,
because we weren't given consoles, man. We had an Atari 2600. That was it. If we wanted anything after that, because as far as my father was concerned, the Atari 2600 was the pinnacle of man's creation when it came to video games, and there was no need to increase it.
There were some good games on there. Adventure. Yeah. Pitfall.
My Hero.
Centipede.
Pac-Man.
Yeah, well, the Atari 2600 version of Pac-Man left some things to be desired.
War. Yeah. Driving around with the tanks. Set the maze walls to bouncy.
Zixit. Not Zixit. What was that one? That was a DOS game. What's the one I'm thinking of where you had the bug in the middle of the right hand of the screen?
No idea off the top of my head.
I can't think of what it's called. Berserk? Okay, Psycho says it's called Berserk. Okay.
Okay.
So, anyways, God, we're old.
And the number of games that came out on that console
that were complete trash. E.T.
Oh, God, the worst game ever.
Concord, Madman. Worst game ever.
I'm trying to remember if... I don't remember if it was on the Atari or Commodore, but it was a racing game. I don't think it was called Road Rage. Because you would have this little jet that would come by and give you fuel at the end of it, and you collected little globes.
It was a police car.
Yeah, you'd have the police cars too.
Rockets and stuff. Yeah, I know the one you're talking about. I just can't think of the name of it off the top of my head.
I don't remember if I played that on the Atari or the Commodore.
Yeah, when you get to the end of the stage, the car slows down, the helicopter comes flying over the top and then drops down and gives you fuel.
Yeah. Yeah, and then when you actually finish the stage, he turns and you can see the front of the car.
And the car goes up into the back of the truck for the next level.
Yeah. Fuck, what was that one?
On with the show, we'll figure it out later.
I don't remember if I played that on the Commodore or if I played that on the Atari, but that was a great game. I played the shit out of that. If we're talking old games, Jungle Hunt was one I played the fuck out of on the Commodore. I loved that game. And then today, if you look into it, everybody says it's one of the worst games on the computer. It's just like, fuck you. Anyways. Let's do this next article. It's from IGN. Lucasfilm is being sued for recreating Grand Moff Tarkin actor Peter Cushing's image in Rogue One. This one's weird. And the reason I want to talk about it is because I think it's going to start coming up a lot more often. Disney subsidy Lucasfilm is being sued over its recreation of Grand Moff Tarkin actor Peter Cushing's image in Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. As reported by The Times, a friend of Cushing's has alleged Disney did not have permission to recreate the actor's image with special effects for Rogue One. Disney tried and failed to have the case dismissed for a second time on September 9th of 2024. That's why I want to talk about this, because Disney didn't outright get the case dismissed, which is why I think this is going to be interesting. The plaintiff, Kevin Francis, is suing Lucasfilm through his film company, Tyburn Film Productions, and also brought claims against Rogue One producer Lunark Heavy Industries, the late executors of Cushing's estate and Cushing's agency, Associated International Management. So he's suing the Cushing estate over this.
I don't know. I think the estate would have rights to his image.
Well, he's claiming he does. Francis claimed he must give authorization for any recreation of Cushing's image following an agreement made between him and the actor in 1993, 1 year before his death at the age of 81. Lucasfilm claimed it didn't think it needed permission to recreate Cushing's image due to his original contract for Star Wars in 1977 and the nature of the special effects. It also paid around $37,000 to Cushing's estate after being contacted by his agent about the recreation. So they paid, because, I mean, it's been a while since I saw Rogue One, but he was only there for like 5 seconds. It was like he just turned around on screen to go, oh, look, here's the guy from the original Star Wars, because they were tying it into the first movie.
Yeah, them delivering the planes for the Death Star.
Yeah. So on September 9th, Deputy High Court Judge Tom Mitchison dismissed the appeal, stating the case should go to trial. Quote, I am not persuaded that the case is inarguable to the standard required to give summary judgment or to strike it out, he added. Quote, in an area of developing law, it is very difficult to decide where the boundaries might lie in the absence of a full factual inquiry, unquote. Star Wars spans many eras, having started in 1970, okay, blah, blah, blah. And many, it's used special effects to de-age the like of Mark Hamill as Luke Skywalker, for example, and the technology has been used to put deceased actors in its films, too. This includes Cushing's Tarkin, also includes Carrie Fisher's Princess Leia. The actress died in 2016 after just two of the three sequel trilogy films had been filmed, and Disney used special effects alongside repurposed footage to include her in Episode 9. So, but... So he's apparently saying that the actor had signed an agreement with this other company saying that they could use his image after he died. And so now, since Disney recreated it, they're saying, no, no, you didn't get permission from us. That's copyright violation, or I guess copyright violation. I don't really, you know, some sort of
copyrighted his image.
Yeah. It's some sort of intellectual property violation, but even Cushing's estate is, you know, not so one, there's some question as to the legitimacy of the claim, but this is going to come up more and more because, you know, Star Wars put a, you know, they've done that a couple of times. You know, they put, you know, like the article said, put Carrie Fisher in another movie after she was dead. They put her in Rogue One too, if I remember right, at the very end. But that's going to happen more and more where they put dead actors through, you know, either AI or other special effects, especially once they've done the face scans and the model work to, well, fuck. I can't think of his name. The guy from Ghostbusters. Harold Ramis. They put him in a movie, you know, a decade after he died.
Freddie Mercury has done concerts.
Yeah. They
I'm
did the holographic
like
Tupac
video. Yeah, holographic Tupac too.
Now, I'm assuming for all those cases, they either had permission of the estate or, you know, some sort of agreement to use it. But what happens when they, you know, like with this case, it's unclear who owns the image. How's that work?
I'm thinking it would belong to the estate if there's not a contract selling it to someone else. So they would need, he would need to produce his contract and then, hopefully, the notary that notarized it is of good repute.
Yeah. I like what Psycho said in the IRC. If I can copyright my image, can I sue anyone who captures it on a security camera? No, because it's not a for-profit enterprise. But if they use the security camera footage for anything other than security, you've got a case. Why wouldn't they just spin up new actors that never existed so they can keep using the actors for centuries? Yeah, I could see that. I mean, they're called cartoon characters.
Trying to get them to create original content. Are you fucking kidding? This is Hollywood.
Yeah, they don't do anything original. You're right.
Fuck, if you go look at the faces of actors, you can follow them all through their history going right back to the original fucking movies started being made. Every generation has their fucking Tom Cruise. Every generation has, you know, whatever, and they all look identical.
Actually, no, Cypress has a good point there. So if they sell the security footage to the police like Ring does, yeah, you might actually have something on that saying they didn't have permission to use your likeness when they sold the footage. Now, they're still going to argue it wasn't for commercial enterprise since they were giving it to the police, but and Amazon will say, well, we're not selling the footage. We're selling access to the system that contains the I'm sure they'll have some lawyer spin up some bullshit, but you might actually have something on that one with the whole selling the footage. But if they just give the footage to the police, well, they're using that for, you know, law enforcement, not commercially. But yeah, if Amazon's using it commercially by selling the footage, I think you got an argument there, man. So... But I think this is going to come up more and more because now that it's happening, every actor is going to be rushing to, like you said, a lawyer or a notary to, you know, set up the usage of their image in the future. And you'll also have studios to start to put in their contracts. We have the rights to use your image in perpetuity in future movies. And that'll become a negotiating point in contracts, I'm sure.
And that's something that's already been addressed with the last actor strike and writer strike.
Oh, yeah, they were on
ownership of their images were one of the things they were addressing.
That's interesting. So, I don't know. It just seems like an interesting road that that's going to go down, especially with, you know, especially with like the, when the AI stuff starts spinning up more so that you can do things in real time, not just do the, you know, the face swaps they're doing today. So next article.
Next article.
All right. Next one up is from The Verge. Surprising nobody, Meta fed its AI on almost everything you've posted publicly since 2007. Meta has acknowledged that all text and photos that adult Facebook and Instagram users have publicly published since 2007 have been fed into its artificial intelligence models. Australia's NBC News reports that Meta's global privacy director, Melinda Claiball, initially rejected claims about user data from 2007 being leveraged for AI training during a local government inquiry about AI adoption before relenting after additional questioning. Quote, "The truth of the matter is that unless you have consciously set those posts to private since 2007, Meta had just decided that you will scrape all of the photos and all of the text from every public post on Instagram or Facebook since 2007, unless there was a conscious decision to set them private," unquote, Green Party Senator David Shoebridge published in the inquiry. That's the reality, isn't it? And correct, Claiborne responded. So they go on and on. But, I mean, so the Australian government's been out of shape because they didn't get the use. No, basically, they're upset that nobody got the option to opt out before Facebook did this. So, I mean, surprising nobody, they were going to do this, and they probably did it with the private data too, and just built a different model. But, they're upset that they didn't get the chance to opt out. Apparently the option was given to European users because they were uncertain about how that regulation applied. So, I think it's as much they're trying to get some laws passed in Australia as anything else, but, you shouldn't be surprised that anything you've posted on the internet is being used for training AI models, whether you said it's okay or not. Nothing? Really?
I think it's pretty self-explanatory.
I kind of assumed it was already doing, but I also think, Facebook put it in their, in their terms of service, that they own everything you stick on Facebook.
Yeah, they did. That whole perpetual usage license that the lawyers make them stick in there, they initially put it in there just to, you know, make sure that they weren't going to get in trouble for continuously posting something on a website. But yeah, that means they can do whatever the hell they want with it, which is why it's really gross that Adobe put that in there too, considering everybody uses, you know, Adobe software for everything, and that's why everybody got pissed at Adobe last year. Not last year, when was that? A couple of months ago now.
I was trying to think of what type of case someone could have for posting, and I wonder if children would have an argument because they weren't old enough to consent to any contract. So anything trained on a kid's photo, even their parents can't consent to certain things.
Maybe. I don't know. That's one of those things where you need a lawyer. And I don't know that any lawyers know this stuff well enough to really...
Oh, it'd be whoever was doing it would be setting precedent if a law hasn't already been passed on it.
So... All right, let's do this next one. It's from Android Authority. YouTube on TVs is cramming ads down your throat.
There you go, Morps.
Pausing videos. What you got?
Spy Hunter. That's the game you're looking for.
Spy Hunt. Yes. Okay. Well,
it only took me 20 minutes to find
it. Oh, I shouldn't click the link during the show because the audio will.
Yeah.
No. That's not it.
Oh, fuck.
That's not the game. I don't remember what that game was called.
Oh, I give up. That's the best I'm going to get. You're going to get me for. Anyway, next story. Sorry. Didn't mean to derail.
I got
to
look. Because if I can find a screenshot. Oh, that looks like. Rad Racer? Is that it? No. That can't be it. That might be it. Let's see. Commodore. Rad Racer. I don't know what that is.
Yeah. Dude, you're going to just.
It is. It's Rad Racer. No, because that one doesn't have the fuel gauge. I don't think. Or I played it on something else. Maybe it was on the Atari. Or just the screenshot search is showing me the wrong shit. Doesn't matter. Anyways, so if you watch YouTube on your smart TV and don't have a YouTube premium subscription, you might soon start seeing ads when you pause a video. YouTube first announced this pause ads format back in May last year and briefly tested it in select markets, and now appears to be rolling out to more users. Users on Reddit and X reveal that YouTube on smart TVs now show ads when you pause the video. As shown in the images below, the video shrinks to a small window on the left, and the ad shows up in a column on the right. And yeah, they've got what looks like a Mario video game paused on one side. I guess it was a Let's Play or whatever. And then on the other side, yeah, there's an ad for Dunkin' Donuts. The ad column has a sponsored label with the brand's name and logo at the top, followed by the ad itself, a caption, and buttons to dismiss the ad or view more information. The ad automatically disappears when you resume playback, or you can remove it manually with the dismiss button. For now, Dunkin' Donuts seems to be the only advertiser suggesting a limited rollout. However, given that YouTube has been testing the format for well over a year, it may appear for more users with ads from other brands soon. YouTube has been aggressively experimenting with new ways to display ads on the platform over the last year. In addition to pause ads formats, the company also is exploring longer, unskippable ads and picture-in-picture ads for live video. Wow, picture-in-picture ads. You can get fucked. You can just get right fucked with that.
Fuck that shit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Cycross is saying this way. Hates Roku TVs, Fire Sticks, and other Android things that you sideload things like NewPipe. Absolutely. In fact, I don't think buying a smart TV is the right thing to do. Buy a dumb screen and then load, you know, attach whatever device you want to it.
Yep. Only way to fly, kids.
Everyone else in my family has bought these smart TVs. I refuse to do it. And I'll use a little external Android stick or hook a Raspi up to it or even just a computer. Psycho says the smart TVs are cheaper, and you're right, they usually are, because Roku or whoever's made the smart things that they're pre-installing them is actually paying, you know, Samsung or whoever's making the thing for, you know, the preloaded crap on it, just like they do with computers. So I'm sure they are a little bit cheaper because they're getting another revenue stream off of it. But the thing with the smart TV,
plug it into the Wi-Fi.
Huh?
Don't attach it to the internet. Smart TV, don't use the actual.
Yeah, just use the menu.
Computer part.
Just use enough of it to select your input and then use a Fire Stick.
Exactly. Just go straight to HDMI port 1, activate it, turn it into a screen.
Yeah, that's fair. If you know, and like I said, it's a right pain in the behind to deal with these smart TVs, especially when they get a little bit out of date. You know, the company that makes it stops updating it, stuff stops working, or you got shit like this where they start shoving ads on the thing. Was it Samsung that was doing that?
I piffed my Roku.
Huh?
I piffed my Roku.
Yeah.
I got sick of the YouTube ads.
So what are you using now? Anything?
2014 laptop.
That works.
Out of date Windows. I don't give a fuck. The only thing I had to buy was a wireless keyboard and mouse, and that cost me $15 for the cheapest one.
That's what I did for years.
TV. Like, I could plug the internet into the TV and use all that the stuff, but not HDMI one.
I actually had a computer I'd specifically built for, you know, watching downloaded movies and, you know, streaming stuff.
Yeah.
Madman was rooming it with me at one point when I had a machine like that. So.
Yeah. Back when, Shoutcast TV was a thing.
Oh, yeah.
My wife's like, I don't like it that you pirate stuff. She sits on the couch binge watching fucking Battlestar Galactica.
That's good right up to the last couple of episodes.
Yeah, but the irony is she's pirating on the fucking TV. But because it's a lot, yeah, the disconnect is hilarious, dude.
So, yeah, Cycros, you can cast to a lot of these devices. I know for my Fire Stick, I had to put a little app, extra app on it to be able to cast from, not the Google stuff that, you know, the Android stuff worked fine. It was mostly the Apple stuff that I needed the app for. But because I had people visiting who were going to stream Fox News from their iPhone, they wanted to put it on my screen. I'm like, all right, here you go. So anyways, it was better than trying to figure out how the hell, because I don't have a regular cable line. I don't see a point in getting cable TV. I don't watch it. I don't see a point. It's like, why pay for that if I'm not going to use it? So I actually used to have their, it was back before I moved, but I used to have Comcast? No, Spectrum. I think Comcast bought Spectrum, so maybe it's an irrelevant distinction. They used to actually call me, and their person was like, well, what's your hesitation on signing up for cable TV? It's like, I'm not going to watch it. Why would I pay for something I'm not going to use?
Exactly.
What are you doing for TV now? I don't watch a lot of TV.
I haven't had a TV, as in like what you would say is a TV, since, I don't know.
But yeah, I would have fun trolling them. I think I eventually got put on their do not call list, but I would have fun trolling them by just seeing how long I can keep them on the phone by not signing up for service. Simple argument of, I'm not going to watch it. Why would I pay for it?
Did you notice how bad the TV has gotten though?
Oh yeah. When I visit people who are watching it, I mean, it's half and half on the ads versus the program. Uh-huh. And most of the programs are god awful.
Yep. It's just terrible.
I would go with most of the programs are god awful, but I pull up actual television shows that are still being aired because I don't watch them on TV that often. But an episode of NCIS is still 43 to 50 minutes. That's what it's been since it started airing over a decade ago.
Well, maybe it's the food TV stuff.
That's still what it is on network television.
But are they running the Chiron banner ads below?
No, not during the show.
Okay.
So, at least that TV show and then everything that AMC runs, they're still the same length as they were when I was a kid.
Okay, well, maybe it's just, like I said, the Fox News and food TV stuff my parents watch when I visit them. Feels like they've got a lot more ads than they used to.
It might be the news, because I know the news doesn't have a length format.
Oh, well,
good before thing. Hard cuts.
And I mean, again, it could just be my perception. It's not like I've sat there with a stopwatch, right? So, all right, let's do, I got more stuff to do. We should probably do some of that. This one's kind of interesting. It's from Ars Technica. Paste these links in here. In just a couple of days into the Google ad tech antitrust trial, it seems clear that the heart of the U.S. Department of Justice case is proving that Google's ad manager is the key to the tech giant's alleged monopoly. Google ad manager, I thought they were found guilty of this already. Well, no, it's from today. I guess it's just ongoing. Google ad manager is the buy and sell side of the ad tech platform launched following Google's acquisition of DoubleClick and AdX in 2008 for $3 billion. God, that seems like chump change now, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's currently used to connect Google's publisher ads or ad server with its ad exchanges, tying the two together in a way that allegedly locks the majority of publishers into paying higher fees on the publisher side because they can't afford to drop Google's ad exchange. The DOJ has argued that Google's ad manager, quote, serves 90% of publishers that use the ad tech tools to sell their online ad inventory, unquote, Ad Age reported. And through it, Google clearly wields monopoly powers. In the opening statement, DOJ attorney Julia Tarver Wood argued that acquisitions helped Google manipulate the rules of ad auctions to maximize profits while making it harder for rivals to enter and compete in markets Google allegedly monopolized. The DOJ has argued those alleged monopolies are in markets, quote, for publisher ad servers, advertisers, ad networks, and the ad exchanges that connects the two, unquote, Reuters reported. Google has denied this characterization of their ad tech dominance, calling the DOJ's market definitions too narrow. The tech company also pointed out that the Federal Trade Commission investigated and unconditionally approved the DoubleClick merger in 2007 amidst what the FTC described as the urgent high public profile discussions of the competitive merits of the transaction, in which numerous sometimes conflicting theories of competitive harm were proposed, unquote. At the time, the FTC concluded that the acquisition, quote, was unlikely to reduce competition in any relevant antitrust market, unquote. Well,
the counter argument to that is we were wrong.
Yeah, the counter argument, that's exactly where I was getting ready to go. It's like, yeah, they could just be wrong. In its complaint, the DOJ argued that the DoubleClick, quote, acquisition vaulted Google into a commanding position over the tools publishers use to sell advertising opportunities, complementing Google's existing tools for advertisers, Google Ads, and set the stage for Google's later exclusionary conduct across the ad tech company or ad tech industry, unquote. To set things right, at the very least, the DOJ has asked the court to order Google to spin off Google Ad Manager, which may or may not include valuable products like Google's Display and Video 360 platform. There's also the possibility that U.S. District Judge Liani Brinkema could order Google to sell off its ad business entirely. Oh, I don't know how that would work. So the way Google is structured, they have all this different stuff, right? They've got the search engine, they've got YouTube, they've got all of the little things they spin up, they got Gmail, and their ads are through all of it, right? You know, the Google Ad Manager is through all of this stuff. So saying you have to sell the ads as a separate business, I don't know how that works, because that's what funds every other thing Google does. I would say the way you would do it is you would say, okay, we're going to split up Google into several constituent companies based on function, and they all individually sell ads. Now you've got instant competition rather than just forcing Google to sell off its own ad manager to somebody else who's not going to be the ad monopolist. I don't know on that one. That's a weird way to do it, which makes me wonder again, does the judge really understand what's going on at Google to suggest forcing them to sell off the business? Because
yeah, YouTube should be its own thing. Their search engine should be its own thing. And then Gmail? Those are the three things that I do. So those are the three business models I know.
They've got a few other. Yeah, they've got a ton of other stuff. And of course, they've got their Google Cloud. They sell. When we say Gmail, that would be inclusive of their enterprise offerings for, you know, Google Drive, Google Mail, and stuff like that, because they sell corporate things like that, corporate accounts. And they've got the rest of the cloud platform, the workspaces stuff. They've got all kinds of things. Google's Ad Manager could be worth less if Google's DV360 platform isn't included in the sale, or if selling either the publisher or advertising side cuts out data, allowing Google to set the prices that it wants. The CEO of an ad platform called Permutive, Joe Root, really, told Ad Age that, quote, it is hard to say how much of the value of Google's ad business is because it has this advertiser product and DV360 versus how much of its value comes from Google Ad Manager alone. Root doubts that cannot be the dude's real name. Root doubts that Google Ad Manager is, quote, on its own that valuable, unquote. However, based on newly released documents from the trial, some analysts predict that any new entity spun out of Google would be almost too big for any buyer, Ad Age reported. One estimate from an ad tech consultant who helmed a strategic advisory firm called Luma Partners, Terrence Kawaja, suggested that Google's ad tech business as a standalone company, quote, could be worth up to $95 billion today, Ad Age reported. You can't divest $100 billion, Kawaja just said. There's no buyer for it. Google would have to spin it off to its shareholders, and that's how any forced remedy would manifest. So the article goes on, But you know, they get into a bunch of this stuff. None of that really matters to the core argument of the article, which is that Google spinning off Google's ad business as a standalone business. One, it's too big for anybody to buy it. And two, you kill the rest of Google because that ad business is what runs the rest of Google, aside from some enterprise support for things like Gmail and Google Cloud. But you would kill the company doing that. The way to do it is to split them up by service, you know, major service group, like you were saying, Google Workspaces / Gmail, YouTube, the search index, and then let each of them have their own advertising company so that you have competition in the ad space among these services. So,
and also competition among the services. I think it would be easier for Rumble to get a foothold if YouTube isn't gobbling up that much cash.
Sure. So, anyways, that's kind of how I view. If you're going to do this, you need to split them up like that, not spin the ad business out on their own, because then the rest of it just goes away. Basically, you just killed the rest of it. So I don't know if that's the judge doesn't understand what's going on, or maybe the judge is just really doesn't like Google and, you know, I don't know, Big Apple fanboy or something.
It's also not entirely the judge's call.
That's true.
It's, how's the prosecution arguing the case?
Well, they're arguing that the ad business is the monopoly, which, again, is a weird thing to argue that, okay, you spin the ads out separately because you still have the monopolistic entity. You're just separating it from Alphabet Inc. So how does that help anybody? Because when you split up AT&T, you ended up with a whole bunch of different companies doing the same thing in different regions, but largely doing the same thing so that they could actually compete against each other versus what they're proposing for Google, which is just murdering the company. So I don't know. Anyways, I don't know. Did anybody have anything on that before I go to the last article here?
Well, I will say, I think you did know. And the answer is splitting it up by the functions of the different parts of the company. And by function, I don't mean the ad. I mean, like,
yeah.
YouTube, all that stuff.
Yeah, split it up over the thing the user wants to use and let each of those functions have their advertising business. I don't know that. That is how I would suggest
them doing their advertising business. They would be selling their space to whichever advertising business, you know, pays them.
So I don't know. I don't know that I'm saying I don't know that my solution is correct. I'm just saying that that's what I would suggest. How about that? Last article I have for tonight is from itpro.com. A disgruntled IT worker at a national industrial company in the U.S. has been arrested after he launched an extortion campaign targeting his former employer in 2023. Daniel Ryan was a core infrastructure engineer at an unnamed U.S.-based industrial firm and attempted to extort his company for $750,000 worth of Bitcoin. If you're holding an infrastructure company hostage and you're going for less than $1 million. I mean, at least round it up to the even million so you can do the pinky thing in the Dr. Evil quote, right? According to a press release issued by the U.S. Attorney's Office for the District of New Jersey, Ryan gained unauthorized access to the firm's computer systems by remotely accessing an administrator account. After gaining access to the corporate environment, Ryan scheduled a series of tasks aimed at disrupting business operations, including changing administration passwords and shutting down servers. Employees at the company received an extortion email on the 25th of November, 2023, warning the workers that the company's IT administrators had been locked out or deleted from the corporate network. The email warned that backups of the organization's servers had been wiped, threatening that additional servers would be shuttered for each day Ryan's ransom demands weren't met. Authorities were able to trace the extortion message back to an email address controlled by Ryan, and he was subsequently arrested in Missouri on the 27th of August, 2024. Ryan has been charged with one count of extortion, one count of international damage to a intentional damage to a protected computer, and one count of wire fraud. Ryan's case is a good example of the potential damage a disgruntled employee can cause if their existing knowledge of the former, or with their existing knowledge of the former employer's IT environment. So it goes on advertising why you should, you know, be careful about these things. But one, use an email address that could be traced back to him. So a little bit of amateur hour there. And two, you weren't requesting nearly enough money or too much, since they actually, you know, went to law enforcement to stop you rather than, you know, just paying you. Either it wasn't enough or it was too much. I'm not sure which. But, yeah, maybe don't do that. It's kind of dumb, really, to ransom your former employer's IT systems, especially if you've got, you know, unauthorized access to the firm's by remotely accessing an administrator account. Probably sounds like your company probably wasn't properly rotating the admin credentials if he knew an admin password to get back in even after you fired the guy.
Sounds about right.
So,
oh, I wonder if they never failed to invalidate his password and shit after they fired him.
Dude, that happens a lot.
That is so sad.
You would be amazed at how often the only reason that, you know, these companies aren't hacked all to hell is that the person with the access is honest about it. Says, hey, you might want to change this. I still know it. Hey, I can still get into your systems. I mean, for God's sake, I shouldn't talk about my own employer, but let's just say if I wanted to be a bad guy, oh boy, I might have a script that can dump out every customer password to a system that does wire transfers. So, and when I run that script, rather than my boss getting that phone call saying, hey, what's Morps doing? Nobody seems to fucking notice. It wouldn't take much to alter that script to, instead of doing the legitimate tests and report generation it's doing, to at the same time start dumping passwords out into the console that could be screenshotted or photos from the phone or whatever. And then, you know, evil ensues. But my parents had to go and raise me with morals. Jerks.
Those assholes.
Right? How much money I could have stolen by now if I didn't have those morals?
Might have to let them know that the next time I see them.
I remind them repeatedly. Anyways. Do you have anything on that, are you?
No, I'm good.
What I have for you tonight in Digital Dojo is a website called taconomical.com. And it's a map of people reporting prices at Taco Bell. So you can select your item from the menu there, such as the Nacho Bel Grande, and then zoom in on the map and for your area and find the cheapest place so let's just zoom in on New England. Here we'll zoom in on Rhode Island. The cheapest place to get get Nachos Bel Grande, the cheapest Taco Bell, is $4.89. Where is that? That's in Riverston Road. That is in Baltimore. The most expensive place is $8.99, literally double. And that is in, where is that? Patterson. Oh, that's just right outside of Yonkers. So, yeah, you can literally use this to find the most expensive and the cheapest places to get Taco Bell menu items. Is that really important to your life? No, probably not. But it's kind of interesting to play with, just to see the price difference in Taco Bell menu items. Okay, it's dumb, but it's fun. That's all I got for tonight. Of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Pure Decking every Thursday. The Galaxy 15 radio site, the BBS. Madman, closing thoughts.
That's funnier than the strange website I learned about today, which just tells you how much inflation has hit your area. I should have wrote that down. That would have made a decent dojo, maybe.
There you go, madman, believing Russian disinformation.
Oh, what, did inflation existed?
Yeah, there's no such thing. Russian disinformation.
All right, well, are you closing thoughts?
No, that was my closing thought.
Thank you for your continuing patience during this transitional zombie apocalypse. Your satisfaction is very important to us.
I'm going to be honest with you. I'm kind of retarded.
Stop edging in my class.
Security, she's got a break.
Man, I'm sorry about this. I hope this doesn't ruin your day.